The recitation was greeted by a deep silence, which Carla broke on her own. "Dear God," she said, "I've just described auroras, earthquakes, and tsunamis." "A polar shift, in other words," Austin said. "Tell us more."
"I'll try, it's been a long time."
She stared at the ceiling. "Each rhyme starts with the same topsy-turvy couplet. And then the verse itself changes. The next one goes, 'The key is in the door. We'll turn the knob and hitch the latch to still the ocean's roar.' It goes on for several verses, then ends with my favorite one. 'Say goodbye tonight. All's well once more. As Carla dreams, for all the world is right.'" Barrett whipped a ballpoint pen and notebook out of his pocket and slid them across to Carla. "Could you write down every verse?"
"Yes, but—"
Carla seemed flustered. "Do you think all this gibberish means anything?"
"Just curious," Barrett said. "We should follow any lead, no matter how seemingly frivolous," Austin said. He glanced at a wall clock. "I've got to get moving. We'll meet back here in a couple of hours after I talk to Pitt."
He asked Zavala to talk to the Trouts and have them chase after the transmitter ships. Carla had been staying at the Trouts' Georgetown townhouse. Austin offered to give her a ride to Georgetown or to visit Schroeder in the hospital, where the old man was recuperating from their exhausting adventure.
"I'll see Uncle Carl later. If I go now, he'll demand that I help him escape from the hospital. I'd like to go with you to see Mr. Pitt."
"I don't know," Austin said. "It might be safer if you stay out of sight."
"My grandfather's work started this nonsense. I owe it to him to stop his research from being perverted."
Seeing the determined jut to Carla's jaw, Austin knew that no argument he advanced would be able to sway her. An hour later, Austin and Carla were speaking with Dirk Pitt at a car show in Manassas when Austin's cell phone started playing the blues. He excused himself and put the phone up to his ear. Barrett was calling, and he sounded excited. There was a muffled engine roar in the background.
"I can barely hear you," Austin said. "What's that noise?"
"I always think better when I'm riding. I think I've got it."
"Got what?"
"The nursery rhyme. It was a code. I've got the formula for the antidote."
Austin couldn't believe his ears.
"Say that again?"
"The antidote,"
Barrett yelled, thinking Austin was simply not hearing over the noise of the motorcycle.
"I've got Laszlo Kovacs' antidote for polar shift."
Shortly after the hot Brazilian sun dropped below the mountains, the handsome 350-foot-long expedition vessel Polar Adventure slipped out of Rio de Janeiro harbor and headed on a southerly course toward the open waters of the Atlantic at its cruising speed of 15 knots. The Polar Adventure had been built by Danish shipbuilders in the late 1990s and had enjoyed a busy schedule that took it to the Mediterranean, Europe, Greenland, and most recently, on Antarctic cruises. As Zavala had learned, the ship had been purchased from its owners by a straw company set up expressly for that purpose by Gantz Foundation. The acquisition was purely an accounting device. On the books, the millions of dollars spent to acquire and refurbish the ship had been earmarked to build a factory in Santiago, Chile. The Adventure had been designed as a smaller version of the great ocean liners. The builders had lavishly decorated the decks and cabins with varnished wood and brass. Passengers could enjoy their voyage from the comfort of the outside cabins, the window-lined dining room, lounge, observation, and covered promenade decks, or from an observation platform below the bridge.